This is Jim Inkster, and welcome to Talk Louisiana. Hope you had a great 4th of July holiday, and we're pleased you're spending time with us on Friday Politics on WWNO and WRKF. Our show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge, and the signature sponsor is the Mayor's Office, Mayor-President of East Baton Rouge Parish. 877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number. That number again is 877-217-5757. And emails are directed to talk@talklouisiana.org. We begin with Mark Ballard in the Beltway covering politics for the newspaper of record, The Advocate in Picayune. And he is here to talk with us about all kinds of matters. And when we talk with him, I can tell you that it's extremely rare when we discuss what we're going to talk about, which tells you Mark is a man who is confident that he can handle any topic that is thrown in his direction. And a few items he's written about over the last few days involve actions by the Supreme Court that didn't gain as much attention as some of the other actions they took, which of course were, in the views of some, cataclysmic. But the latest story from Mark regarding the High Court is that among a flurry of High Court decisions last week was a minor one, so-called minor one, that could impact whether Louisiana has two black representatives in Congress. Justice Samuel Alito gave the state and intervening parties of black voters until July 30th to submit arguments on why the High Court should decide whether to back the legislature's map from January, which drew districts that could lead to two black and four white representatives, draw a different map, or return to the 2022 map that elected five Republicans and one black Democrat. Now, many thought this matter was settled, Mark, but it appears it's far from settled.
No, it is far from settled, and we're not going to see this until the fall, if they take it up, which they probably will, but they'll take it up. But they have thrown out, they being the conservative majority on the Supreme Court, have thrown out different indications of how they would view the Louisiana case. In a South Carolina case, they just that they decided at the end of May, they wrote that the legislature, you know, should be the ones that decide this, and that we shouldn't really be going after the legislature. But in other voting rights cases, they've ruled. And in South Carolina, they were ruling against the arguments that blacks had been moved out of a district in Charleston so that Nancy Mace could have a overwhelmingly Republican district. And so they said that was okay. In the Louisiana case, you have the legislature having basically drawn this second minority majority district, and so are they going to accept that, or are they going to say that it was race based and we have to go back to the original five white Republicans and one black Democrat configuration that we have in the Congress? And so it's going to be an interesting case.
Well, I'm told by those close to Garrett Graves that he feels confident that he'll get his old district back, which may explain why he is on the sidelines this time around. And, of course, this would be highly curious for Cleo Fields, who once before was elected and then lost his district. It would be amazing if it were to happen a second time. But we're a long way from getting there. But nonetheless, Garrett Graves, he could have probably been elected to the PSC. He chose not to do that. He might have been able to unseat Julia Letlow, although that one would have been tough, but he would have been possible, and he would have even had a possibility of winning in the new 6th district. But he sat on the sidelines. Some are speculating he'll run for the U.S. Senate in 2026, but he feels confident that if he doesn't do that, he's going to have his old district back, Mark.
Well, yes, he does. I'm sure. And he's said that to me numerous times. But I think that's still up in the air, because we're still looking at, well, what does the Supreme Court really want to do? What standards do they want to apply? And we just don't know, because they're all over the place on those standards. But he seems to think, and those that are supporting him seem to think that without a doubt that they'll go back to the something very similar to what elected him in 2022, and that's the five white Republicans and one black Democratic district.
All right. Well, the Supreme Court in its final week rejected the state's claim, that's Louisiana, that the Biden administration violated the First Amendment by trying to squash controversial opinions about COVID and vaccinations and other conservative views on Facebook, X, YouTube, and other social media. The 6-3 majority found that Louisiana, Mississippi, and five individuals failed to show that removing or placing warning labels on the post was a result of government interference rather than the application of private policies by the social media companies for moderating content. This was a significant decision, Mark.
Well, it was also the first time that they've actually looked at various standards as it applies to government oversight of the First Amendment as it applies to digital media. But basically what you had was the right-wing Republicans were going after President Biden, saying that he was trying to censor conservative thought, and you had a conservative majority who basically said, you know, please get a grip. And it led by Amy Coney Barrett, who's, you know, is from Metairie originally.
877-217-5757. We will take some calls in short order, Robin Dow producing. But the Biden administration right now is looking at the prospect of perhaps disbanding if some Democrats get their wish, including James Carville. But when you look at the numbers, Biden has been the best president in modern time when it comes to job creation. And today, another excellent report. The Labor Department's June jobs report showed employers added 206,000 jobs last month. That's an extremely healthy number, but to just show how the economy is roaring, the number in May was 218,000. Unemployment did tick up to 4.1%, inching up above 4% for the first time since November of 21, remaining historically low. And the labor market has defied long-running forecasts of a sharper pullback in hiring, though conditions are tightening. But the jobs report right now is something that the president should be touting, and he is, but some would say his lack of eloquence was a real problem in that debate, and that's probably an understatement. And now there is a full-court press to get him to step aside by some members of his party. How significant is this, or will this just go away and Biden will end up being the nominee? How do you see it right now? As we approach today, by the way, is 4 months, 4 months from Election Day today. Mark, your thoughts.
I see this is going to be the critical make or break weekend for President Biden as to whether he's going to continue running. He is going to be given he's going to be interviewed by George Stephanopoulos on ABC tonight, and ABC has said that they are not going to edit it at all. It's just going to be a straightforward interview. And what the president is trying to show is that, you know, that debate performance was just an anomaly. It was not the way he usually is. That's what he's hoping, you know, to show that he's still sharp and on it. There are more and more reports, though, that are coming out that are saying that he is kind of having, I don't know, is there a way to say this without sounding ageist, but he is having more and more senior pauses, if you will. And that has concerned a number of the major donors, as well as more and more members of the Democratic Party. And so I think that what we're going to be seeing is sometime in the next few days, whether or not he has been able to dispel those rumors and put this behind him, or whether we're going to be looking at him stepping aside for someone else.
Well, Dale Brown, who at 88 is still rather sharp, he notes that the final journey is that one we all must take, but it also is usually a process, and it seems that Joe Biden has slipped a lot. Now, some people who are 80 or close to it, like James Carville, who will be 80 in October, he's been on this show, and he takes all comers, and He's quick. Biden's not quick. And in the modern media age, radio, television, social media, you can't be Franklin Roosevelt and hide the fact that you're in a wheelchair. Today, optics mean a lot, and Biden not only had problems visually as far as what it looked like last week, he had trouble really expressing himself, and his voice was imperiled that night as well. It was the trifecta, and I don't know that he can recover from this, Mark.
Well, I mean, we're certainly going to find out this weekend whether he can recover from this. And do we have to recall that? I mean, he was like on the edge of a political precipice back, he having during the 2020 elections. He lost badly in Iowa, lost badly in New Hampshire, and came back and won South Carolina.
Yeah, he's been the comeback kid, but he's no kid anymore. We'll talk more with Mark after this. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to Friday Politics on Talk Louisiana. WWNO joining the listeners of WRKF who have been with us now for over 20 years. And it is nice to talk with the audience in New Orleans. And of course, this is a state in which the two largest cities comprise, when you count metro area, half the state. So it's great to be with a good portion of Louisiana as we get perceptions from here, there, and everywhere about where we are 4 months before Election Day. It's not only an Election Day for President of the United States, but all the congressional seats are up for grabs. There are local races. In Baton Rouge, we have a mayor-president race. And qualifying starts the 17th and concludes on the 19th. So 2 weeks from today, we'll know who's on the ballot in Louisiana. Again, your number is 877-217-5757. Paul in Opelousas. Paul, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning to your guests. Just a question and a comment. Question: have we bought the Clio signs too early? And just a statement that if Biden pulls out, Trump's going to win. It's just I'm sorry. He's going to win. If we pull out, he's going to win because he's going to show disorganization of the Democratic Party.
Well, there are people who are making that case, and one of them, of course, is Joe Biden. But Kamala Harris is polling better than Biden, who's now 9 points behind Trump in the New York Times poll of registered voters and 6 points behind in the poll of likely voters. And Trump won an election against Hillary Clinton 9 years ago, 2016. It's hard to believe it's been that long, 8 years ago. He announced 9 years ago, but 8 years ago, 2016, he won an election over Hillary Clinton despite losing the overall vote by about 3%. So you can see if Biden does not get a majority of the votes, he probably is in a world of hurt. And right now, he's 6 points behind, and Kamala Harris is 2 points behind, for what that's worth. And the New York Times, of course, does reputable polls, and that's only a snapshot of where we are right now. The poll was concluded on the 2nd of July, so it's only a three-day-old poll. And Mark, as you know, politicians live and die by their poll numbers.
They do. And but it's also, they're wanting to look at it in a longer term to see, you know, is this just a blip or is this going to be a little bit longer? And I think that's what they'll be looking for. I mean, Kamala Harris or any of the other possibles, Gretchen Whitmire, governor of Michigan, or Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, who have been named as you know, very possible likely successors to run, is what Paul Anopoulos was suggesting was that there's no possible way they would win because it just undermines the dysfunction. I would have to say that let's take a look at the House of Representatives dysfunction, where they, you know, cut through, good Lord, what, four, or I guess Mike Johnson was the fourth nominee for House Speaker, and they've been unable to get much passed, though Johnson's done a pretty good job getting the most important bills passed, you know, and so that kind of shows up. And then remember that a large part of the people will be voting against Trump because of the chaos that they thought of his first administration. And so that's not going to have changed despite who was in charge of the Democratic Party at that time. And I want to point out that the sixth congressional district, the one that he was asking about, Cleo, is that the Cleo signs, is that in this election, that is the district that's going to be voted upon. That's why Garrett Graves left, because it's become a majority black district that stretches from Baton Rouge to Shreveport.
And Cleo Fields, who, if my numbers are right, he was born in 1962, so he's at a stage in his life where he's willing to roll the dice that he'll have that district for longer than one term, and he may. The Supreme Court has been all over the map on decisions, and this was a very conservative legislature and an extremely conservative governor who made this happen. And it was Jeff Landry who on this show said he did it because he felt like the courts were imploring him to do so. Of course, he also wanted to help his friend Cleo Fields, and some say wanted to hurt his political foe, Garrett Graves. Is there more to that than meets the eye, or is that being overplayed, Mark?
Well, that is going to be what they're focusing mostly on, in that it was as much political as it was racially based. But we need to also recall that as the Attorney General, that Jeff Landry said it's just impossible to create a second minority-majority district when he was defending the legislature's first map from 2022, and that the state did not put on a, when they held the hearing, the three-judge panel that was selected by the Fifth Circuit, when they held the hearing over this particular map in answer to the lawsuit that was filed in Monroe, that that it was predominantly the interveners, the black voters who intervened, that put on evidence that it was politics, and that there was and that the district had a continuity to it. It was not the state that put on most of that evidence. It was the interveners that put on most of that evidence. And so all of this is going to play a role in this very confused case if it goes before the Supreme Court.
877-217-5757, your Talk Louisiana number for Friday Politics. David in Atlanta. Hello, David.
Good morning, gentlemen. Mr. Ballot, Trump has said many, many times, illegal immigrants are drawing into the Social Security funds. The truth of the matter is, to draw Social Security disability or retirement, you have to work 40 quarters and pay into those funds. Furthermore, illegal immigrants are using phony Social Security numbers and using friends or other people's Social Security, and they're paying into Social Security. Illegal immigrants or undocumented aliens are contributing billions of dollars to the Social Security funds.
All right. Well, David makes a point that is valid. But that issue right now, I think the Republicans have an advantage on that issue, Mark. What's your take on the pounding away at Joe Biden for not cracking down on, quote, illegal immigration, although many of these same Republicans employ illegal immigrants?
Well, I think more to the point on that was that that the Democratic members of the Senate, along with some Republican members of the Senate, came up with the most sweeping immigration bill that the country's ever seen, and it employed a good number of the points and the standards that the Republicans wanted, and is outlined in HB2. And the House bill on it, but President Trump said he needed to have immigration as an issue in this election, and almost immediately the Republicans just backed off of that bipartisan agreement.
Right, and Mike Johnson was leading the pack.
And Mike Johnson was leading the pack. Mike Johnson, you know, needs the support of Donald Trump, and I mean, I think, to me, I mean, there's a whole lot of evidence that's, you know, for this and that, you know, of what the caller mentioned, you know, and, you know, and that there are very few, if any, immigrants voting and all of that sort of stuff. And that's all just kind of flack for the fact that they've not actually addressed the issue and have not addressed the issue for decades. And when they did, the Republicans killed it.
Paula in New Orleans asked if Bill Cassidy was at the airport when Donald Trump arrived to be at his fundraiser on St. Charles Avenue at Boise Bollinger's pad, and I don't think he was there, although he is saying he will vote for, quote, the Republican, even though he voted to convict Trump on articles of impeachment. But John Kennedy was there, as was Steve Scalise. They were all smiles. Mark, surprise, surprise.
Oh. Well, that doesn't. Yeah, I do not know if Senator Cassidy.
I don't think he was there. And I doubt that Donald Trump would want him to be there.
Right. I wonder what that conversation would be like.
But Cassidy's trying to keep his job, and he thinks he needs Donald Trump's support. And in a closed primary, win or lose, Trump will be essential to anointing the winner of Louisiana's 2026 Senate race. We'll talk more with Mark when we return after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Jason Berry is on deck, the remarkable reporter who calls New Orleans home, and this is Talk Louisiana Friday Politics on WWNO in New Orleans, 89.9, and WRKF in Baton Rouge, 89.3. We're wrapping it up with Mark Ballard of The Advocate, our weekly visit. We've been talking about what's happening in Washington and how it applies to Louisiana. But before we go, Mark, Monday, as in the 8th of July, will mark 6 months in office for one Jeffrey Martin Landry. And I don't know of a more activist governor in my time in the first 6 months. He has been acting like a guy on a mission. What do you make of it?
Well, I think he is a guy on a mission, and he's got a two-thirds majority in the legislature, so he can do pretty much as he wants, and he's a powerful governor, as a lot of our governors are, but he is taking much advantage of the two-thirds majorities in the legislature and pressing for a lot of the conservative answers to many issues.
Well, now that Trump, according to Real Clear Politics, by the way, the betting average is there's a 56% chance that Trump will be elected president. And he has taken a shine, and I think the feeling is mutual with our governor. Is there any prospect that Governor Landry, would go to Washington with Donald Trump if Trump returns to the Oval Office?
Well, Landry, I mean, there could be. I mean, it's hard to predict what Donald Trump does, but he is not among those being frequently discussed up here as possible running mates.
Could be Attorney General, though, if he wants the job.
If he wants the job, yes. But I don't, so far they have not really been discussing who might be in those particular positions, but
we'll see.
Other than that, they'll be very conservative. So.
Well, Mark, thank you as always. Pleasure talking with you today, and we'll be speaking again next week. And we're joined now by Jason Berry, the remarkable reporter. His book, Lead Us Not Into Temptation, Catholic Priests and the Sexual Abuse of Children, 1992. That was an election year. It was the first major book on that issue. That was the year that Bill Clinton, who, like Jason Berry, is a graduate of Georgetown University, was elected president of the United States of America. And Bill Clinton carried 32 states. He beat George Bush. Now, it was a three-way race, but it was not close. He got 7% advantage over George Herbert Walker Bush, who was an incumbent president. And incumbent presidents usually do pretty well when they run for re-election. That was the case, certainly, when Bill Clinton ran. He won easily over Bob Dole. When George Bush ran, number two Bush, he won a close race, but he did win over John Kerry. When Barack Obama ran, he won a close race over Mitt Romney. When I say close, it was 5 million votes, and maybe not so close. And then when Donald Trump ran, he lost, but he says he won, and he's back. And now Joe Biden, the man who beat him by 7 million votes and beat him in the Electoral College 305 to 232, is on the ropes. And we're going to talk with Jason about a few different matters, but he's been following this, and particularly how Louisiana's own Chester James Carville has been reacting. And Carville is really perhaps the most vocal Democrat, saying Biden cannot win and the Democrats are fools if they keep him. But where do we stand, and how much of an impact is Carville making on the discussion, Jason Berry?
Oh, I think James has had a profound impact. I did a piece for The Guardian back in December where he stated quite dramatically that the president was too old and that he really couldn't win the race. He thought he was a detriment. And he said that the party was brimming with talent, many younger people, governors like Gavin Newsom of California, Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan, and he also mentioned Mitch Landrieu, among other people. Well, I don't know what the fallout of that comment was, but he made another statement after the Super Bowl when the president turned down the opportunity for a 20-minute interview, and Carville was really riled about that. And I think rightly so, when he said that the people around him apparently did not want him to take advantage of this, you know, unique moment. I mean, 20 minutes of free airtime during one of the most watched spectacles on TV is really blowing a great chance. Well, then after the speech the other night, or excuse me, the debate performance, people were emailing Carville, and he told Ron Brownstein of The Atlantic in a text, I tried, I really tried. And that was kind of the tenor of his comments after that, but I think public opinion has really swung hard, especially among Democratic donors from everything I'm reading, and they want the president to at least state he's not going to run again, whether he would resign outright or throw the field open, I guess is an open question right now.
Well, the debate performance was putrid, and Biden has acknowledged that, but is there any prospect that it was just a bad night, or is this a pattern that will not get any better?
I would say the latter. I don't see how he can recover from this because, you know, Lloyd Doggett, the congressman from Texas, has now come out and said that he thinks the president should step aside. And other people are doing that. I mean, The Times has a story on donors being very restless and not wanting to get behind him. I think the larger question is how that happens. If he resigns while in office, then Kamala Harris immediately, of course, becomes president. And then it would be her responsibility to immediately or soon thereafter, within a matter of days, pick her vice president, whoever that might be. Alternatively, if he says, okay, I'm not going to run again, then the convention next month in Chicago is going to become, well, Carville said, and I think he's right, if it's an open convention and all these, you know, younger talents of the Democratic Party are getting up and giving speeches, he thinks it would be widely watched, and the result would be a very different ticket than we have now.
There's a story that first appeared about 36 hours ago from a reporter. I think his name is Katie Agoba. I think that's how he pronounces it. He writes, top Democratic consultants debated Wednesday before an audience of large Democratic donors whether they could push Joe Biden from the race. 72% of the people want something different. Why not give it to them? That was a quote from James Carville on this conference call to donors to the Democratic super PAC American Bridge. They're just asking for a different choice. And then, according to Mr. Goba, he Carville asked advisors or donors who want Biden out of the race to cut off money to politicians who don't take their side. Now, that sounds like James, but he is really trying to put the pressure on.
He absolutely is. When I interviewed him the other day for the second piece in The Guardian, that's the gist of what he said as well. You know, he keeps saying that the Democrats do not have the image of a young party. And in fact, and I'm merely conveying what he has been saying, what he's told me and what he's telling others, most of the leading figures in the party, once you move beyond the White House, are governors, you know, in their 50s. They're a generation younger. Gavin Newsom of California is a particularly compelling figure, and I would say the same of Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan, who has a book out now, a memoir. I would not exclude Mitch Landrieu from that circle of people. Imagine what it would be like if the convention puts all these folks into prime time, and behind the scenes, all the, you know, party elders and potentates are trying to figure out who they want, who will be the presidential candidate, and who would be the vice presidential choice. We haven't seen a convention like that in a great many years because of primaries. And once Biden steps aside, it really becomes a very different story. It becomes a different media narrative. And, you know, in that event, you've got a party of younger people and a Republican candidate in Trump, who is 78 and wants to control the country almost as a dictator. If you read what he said in the Long Time magazine interview, he's also got the Heritage Foundation now with a plan to gut civil service. I mean, these folks want to radically transform the United States of America. And I think that would end up being the major campaign issue, the party of youth versus the party of radical right-wing change. That would be quite a compelling story to cover.
It would, and it may be the way it plays out, but we are 4 months from the finish line. From the finish line. And Joe Biden at this point is trying to desperately make the case that he had a bad night, and it's not reflective of where he is now and where he's going to be when he leaves office, if he's reelected at 86 years old. We'll talk more. Another quarter hour to go with Jason Berry. We'll go to the phone lines. Your number is 877-217-5757. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 for Friday Politics. That's 877-217-5757. Jason Berry is with us, and it would be improper not to mention that he wrote one of the definitive books about his town, graduate of Jesuit High, City of a Million Dreams, which was made into a film. And the film, unlike a lot of locals, which we might appreciate it, actually got some exceptional reviews across the world, and in particular in the United States. And it is a must-read book and a must-see film, a documentary from Jason Berry, City of a Million Dreams. It's his city. And Jason, last week on this show, Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser said he feels a lot safer in New Orleans now. We know we've had some high-profile incidents in the French Quarter the last few weeks, but there is an effort by the current governor to thwart crime in the crown jewel of Louisiana, the city of New Orleans, and in particular, the French Quarter. Is it working?
Well, crime has certainly gone down. I'm not really an authority on this matter. I only know what I read. The decline in violent crime particularly, I think, had begun before Jeff Landry became governor. You know, certainly when you add to an understaffed police department, you know, putting state troopers in, in my view, it, you know, can only help maintain civic order. But, you know, how long a situation like this lasts, whether the police will want that extra contingent, I guess, is a matter to be resolved.
Well, on this topic, Hiller Moore, the district attorney for East Baton Rouge Parish, who also is a native of New Orleans, went to Brother Martin. He notes that Baton Rouge and New Orleans, actually, some might be surprised. When you're just talking about the cities themselves, we're actually collectively, Baton Rouge and New Orleans, a little bit bigger than Boston. Boston has a huge metro area, but only 650,000 live in the city. But he said this year, through the first 6 months, Boston has three homicides. Three. And that gets to quality of life, tourism, everything about a city as far as livability. When you look at the crime numbers in the two biggest cities in our state, Jason, they're not pretty.
No, I would agree. And I think it all goes back to education. If you extend that comparison with Boston, Boston is arguably the education hub of America. You've got so many people in that urban area who are employed by Harvard or MIT or Boston College or any of the universities and colleges there. Education is a major industry. You could argue that LSU and Tulane, you know, fit that bill, but we have nowhere near the level of highly educated people or the knowledge of the, what is it called, industries of the mind sector of the economy that Boston has. And I think, you know, a high level of education has a lot to do with the low level of violent crime.
Rebel in Baton Rouge. Rebel, you're on the air with Jason Berry. Good morning, sir.
Hi. Thank you so much, Jim. And, sir, thank you for the work you do. I couldn't agree with you more. I've been saying for years now that what we're experiencing is a fascist coup, and the Supreme Court has now sanctioned that coup. But getting back to your book, part of every fascist coup is that they always blame their political opponents of pedophilia. And, of course, usually it's the fascists themselves that have documented cases of pedophilia. Like,
all right, well, what's your question? What's your question, Rebel? You're darting off in all kinds of areas, but what's your question?
I'm sorry. But that is my question. Isn't it much more likely for a child to be sexually abused in church than they are in a drag show?
All right. Well, that was Jason's signature work. But repression, and Jason's a Catholic. I'm a Catholic, and we've been certainly we've had our faith tested, Jason.
It's tested every day, but I've never been asked that question. I've never read about people being abused in drag shows because I think the folks who go to drag shows do so, I guess, because they want to be there. Look, when I was 15, 16, and I'd go down to the French Quarter for Mardi Gras, we'd always go see the, you know, the drag show beauty contest. I don't know anybody who ever got molested at them. In a way, I don't know how else to answer the question.
Well, it was an amusing question, and Rebel's one of our most enlightened callers. It just took him a little while to get to the point, but God bless you, Rebel. Keep calling, please. James in Metairie, you're on with Jason Berry. Hi, James.
Hi, Jim. Good morning, Mr. Berry. Well, yeah, it is a shame that kids are safer around drag queens than priests. Your great work in exposing sex crimes of the Catholic Church, the priest. About 2 months ago, a search warrant was issued and a search conducted at the Archdiocese of New Orleans, in which some shocking details were revealed concerning skinny dipping parties for young boys at the seminary swimming pool and a system of priest giving gifts to victims to pass on to other priests, marking them as easy victims.
All right, Jason, I'm sure you read that, as did James and yours truly, and it may not be the most palatable topic for a show that airs in the morning, but it's there, and probably, James, thank you for asking Jason, a man who knows his terrain better than anybody as far as the scandals within the church. Jason, any surprise?
Oh, yeah, I was surprised. I read the search warrant. And typically, documents like that, which make dramatic assertions or allegations, as the caller just articulated, in my view, indicate that the state, the investigators have leads, and they are trying to get documents that might confirm them. Whether that allegation ends up being proven remains to be seen.
877-217-5757, your number if you'd like to get in under the wire with Jason Berry. Bill Huey in Baton Rouge writes, wouldn't the Democratic Convention be Chicago 1968 all over again if Biden steps aside and there is no candidate? And he asks, what about J.B. Pritzker, the governor of Illinois?
Are you asking me?
Yes, yes.
I haven't seen Pritzker speak. I'm certainly aware. I have a friend who actually did media work on his reelection. I just don't know if, look, at this point, anyone among the top names being, sort of bandied about among the Democrats, the ones who will have the greatest chance of moving up and being nominated are those who have a network beyond the state where they govern or they represent in Congress. And I don't know, what I mean, Pritzker is a billionaire, so he can certainly raise money. But I think the larger question is, how compelling is he as a speaker? Does he articulate a vision that will move people, or will one of the other potential candidates outpace him? I just don't know the answer to that.
And I think there would have to be a really, really, really compelling case to get Kamala Harris to the sideline. She has been the vice president. She was a U.S. senator and attorney general in a state that has one-eighth of the American population. I don't think you can just shove her aside like she's a piece of furniture. She's got to be considered the favorite if Biden falters, and now the Vegas odds are reflecting that. She is now not only the favorite if he goes aside, but she is now picked as the more likely nominee than Joe Biden, which would really be something if this were all to materialize in the next few days. But Jason, I think it's got to happen soon if it's going to happen.
Well, I want to answer that, Jim, by putting in a plug for my novel, Last of the Red Hot Papas. I have a book signing tomorrow.
I know, Earl Long here.
No. This is a novel about a licentious Cajun governor who dies on page 2.
Well, okay. It could be Earl. It could be Huey, but it could be Willie Stark. But yeah, it's a great read. And you'll be at 2 o'clock, I know, tomorrow at Blue Cypress Books on Oak Street in New Orleans. But tell us more.
Well, the novel is about the jockeying for power when the big man goes down. And the same dynamic is unfolding day by day, almost hour by hour. I don't think Joe Biden can sustain this kind of public scrutiny. So, as you said, Kamala Harris would seem to be the heir apparent. I think I'm going back to what I said a bit earlier. In a vacuum, the president really has to think about whether he wants to anoint her by resigning, in which case she would then become president and she would have to select her vice president. And I suspect she would do it pretty quickly because the third in line is, our friend from Baton Rouge, the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, who is so far to the right and has been waging war on the Biden administration every chance he gets.
We do have to roll. But Jason, many thanks. You can see him tomorrow, 2 o'clock, at Blue Cypress Books, Oak Street, New Orleans. Stay safe and stay tuned.